Like the show? Want to listen to episodes early? Consider becoming a patron. Starting at the $3 a month level, patrons get access to a custom patron-only feed where we put out episodes of upstairs studio podcasts like the Childcare Bar and Grill, Miss Becky's Classroom, That Early Childhood Nerd, the Renegade Rules podcast, and others early. That feed is just for patrons. You could be one of them. Go to patreon.com/playvolutionhq or click the link in the show description to learn more. Childcare Bar and Grill podcast. Jeff Johnson here in the Zoom studio with Lisa Murphy.
Hello.
And Brett Schneider is joining us. How you doing, Brett?
Very well, thank you.
Great. Brett is of New Hampshire.
Yeah,
she's almost in Canada. You're closer to the Canada than you are to either Lisa or I. So it's great to have somebody from the Great North joining us. So guys, I've been doing an experiment. I've been sciencing.
Tell us.
So I get this situation where we have access to kind of a not public dog park.
Okay.
And so the people that manage it have provided poop bags. Like there's a little the post with the poop bag with dispensers on
it.
But there's like no garbage can there.
Oh, that's stupid.
Well, yes, that's stupid. And so the people, but I think it's kind of like a national park kind of thing. They want you to tote out your own garbage.
Okay.
So I can see that side of things. And I've asked, you know, why no garbage can? Because it would make people's lives easier. And they're like, wild animals. Because I know raccoons just love, they don't love fresh, yummy garbage. They love bagged dog poop. If I know anything about raccoons, that's what they're into. And so that's their excuse. And they're like, then somebody would have to dump it and blah, 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 blah. And so the problem is that a certain subset of dog park users aren't bagging their dog poop.
Okay.
And I mean, first, those people are heathens. They should be beat with sticks and thrown out of polite society. But also, my dogs like to use the dog park. What are you drinking? Is that a... What? That looks icky.
Again, you weren't supposed to get distracted by it.
Oh my gosh, that was like a squirrel. It was like a ground up green squirrel.
It's about 5 pounds of vegetables through a cold juice press.
Oh my gosh, it looks the same going in as it's going to look coming out. Back to the poop. My problem is dogs like to play at the dog park, but then off in the corners on the far edges of the dog park, all the dogs that poop and don't get it picked up, they start building up the piles of dog poop, and then the dogs don't go over there, or if they do, they're stepping in it, and it increases the other dog's chance, heartworm and all the parasites and everything, and it's just gross. And so for a while, I just grumbled under my breath like other people have been doing, and then I decided on the experiment. I went on the Amazon and I ordered a couple little clips and a 5-gallon white bucket and this cool little black lid for it. That's got, it's kind of a lid, but it's got like a 5-inch hole in the middle. And then when that arrived, it's a camping potty. Exactly. It totally could be. Then when that arrived, I wrote in Sharpie, bagged dog poop only. And then I hung it on the fence. My plan being, I'm gonna dump this once, twice a week, whatever it takes. And then us people that bag our dog poop aren't going to have to do the thing where you gotta walk half a mile. Not quite half. I mean, there's a dumpster nearby, but it's in an enclosure and you gotta get out with the dogs. It's just annoying. So it's gonna make it more convenient for the dog poop pickers.
Sure.
But then my hope was, the experiment side was, will people who haven't been bagging their dog poop start because it's just a tiny little bit easier for them?
And
because, well, I mean, my thing is, you know, people will do stuff if it's easy, right?
Sure.
And so the first 2 days it was up, what I did is I policed all the dog poop. I filled that 5 gallon bucket up twice bagging other people's dog poop because I'm a fucking hero.
I'll make you a shirt.
Jeff, the dog poop hero. And so, because you need to start with a blank slate, right? And right. So now it's been a couple days, and every day I grab a bag, and my dogs are tussling. I walk the fence line looking for errant dog poop. And so far, now it's been 48 hours, so far there hasn't been any.
And is your bucket full?
Well, I've had to empty the bucket a couple times, mostly because I filled it, but other people have been using it. But it appears the non-poop pickers, because there's a place to dump it off right there, have been picking their poop. This could be a Peter Piper picked a peck of puppy poop. This could be one of those kind of things.
Puppy poop.
And so I'm really interested to see if that's going to be kind of maybe none of the non-poop pickers have been there yet. Maybe it's going to be a short-term thing but they're going to do it for a while. And they're going to think, oh, I got to walk clear over back to the other side of the fence where the gate is that I actually go in and out of to drop this in there. And it just might be a bridge too far after giving it a try. But it appears for, 48 hours to be working.
Yeah, preliminary data show.
Yeah, and so let's talk for a moment about what a hero I am, but then about how this whole idea of these baby steps and making things a little bit easier can kind of transfer over into the work that we do with little humans. Thoughts, concerns, issues?
A snarky comment. I have got people in my neighborhood whose dog poops right next to the thing that has a bag and a trash can, and the assholes leave it right there. I didn't know that was a pet peeve of mine until I moved into this neighborhood, and almost every neighbor has a dog.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what? This is rude. There's no excuse.
These people should not be allowed in polite society.
They should not be allowed to have a dog.
Their dog should be confiscated, and then they should be, I don't know.
30 lashes with a wet noodle.
Well, I mean, I'm anti-carb, so I couldn't go for that. I mean, I'm an anti-carb. I love carbs.
A gluten-free spaghetti noodle.
Maybe they go out on some sort of ice flow. I don't know. I just don't think we should live with them. Brett, you've been awfully silent because I talk a lot. But also, are you a non-poop picker?
I don't have a dog.
Oh, well. So you don't pick up dog poop.
I don't. I've scooped cat poop. But I've never had a dog. So it's just not something I know about.
If you had a dog, would you be a good human and pick up his poop?
Yes.
Of course you would.
Yes, of course.
So
look at him and his virtue signaling. but I'm also thinking about the law of thirds, because I've learned now, being a 51-year-old, that the more I learn about human behavior, the more the law of thirds actually applies. So I think probably, and that would be my hypothesis to put against, because I hope we revisit this in a couple weeks or in a future episode to see if you have some follow-up data.
Oh, there will totally, I've got on the calendar marked.
Follow-up duty. Get it, duty, not data. But my guess would be that, you know, it's going to have some, like I would anticipate that for a while it would appear as though all the poop was getting picked up, but then it's going to kind of regulate to some kind of a new normal, which is still, I think, going to be the law of thirds. A third of them are going to throw it away. A third of them, it's the middle variable third, though, that I think you could potentially get to switch to the, I'm going to clean it up all the time now because it's there. But that one third of the, they're never going to do it. It doesn't matter how easy you potentially make it. Unless the virtue signaling peer pressure. Like, let's say I'm a non-poop picker and I happen to be at the park one day at the same time while other people are picking up, like, would I be more inclined to just do it that day because I know people are watching me, or would that potentially change my ongoing behavior?
Yeah, so you're saying in 6 weeks, all those poop pickers, it's going to all be back?
I'm saying that the third I would be curious about is the middle third, because there's always the third that always is going to do it. The third that eventually, that I think there might be room to long-term change the behavior of the middle third, and I would bet that the behavior of the I'm never going to do it third only changes, if it changes at all, if somebody's in the park at the same time as them.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, my whole, I totally did it for selfish reasons, because it just makes my life easier. It's easier to walk out twice a week and dump the whole bucket than it is to haul those little bags every time we go back and forth. But I thought it'd be a fun experiment. Now, in early learning settings, can we use the same strategy? Make small, tiny little changes that make the people we're working with, whether we're talking about parents or coworkers or children, make it a little bit easier for them to do what we want done. Maybe little tiny things we can do to make it easier for staff to be more playful, or kids to handle more responsibility, or parents to embrace play more. Because we did an episode not too long ago about the whole idea of that smallest possible step. And I think this kind of relates to that, huh?
Brett, jump in.
Yeah, I'm thinking one thing we've done in my classroom is we try to just, like, you know, meet everybody where they are and support what would help them best. And we have one little boy who, after lunch, that, like, so we do, like, lunch, clean up, use the bathroom, and then rest time. And that transition is just so hard for him. So then what we started doing, just, like, you know, like, compromise and choice and all that stuff, is we said, how about instead of cleaning up your lunch now, you just go to the bathroom, set up your mat for rest time, and then come back and clean up. And just making that swap of the order for him, he's now able to do it all independently. I don't know what it is, but it's
one little tweak. Yeah, one little feeling like I get to maybe do something a little different than everybody else.
Right.
One
I'm stepping away from this part of the classroom that's stressing me out right now, and then I'm ready to come back and do it.
Yeah,
or just the fact that there's a choice there. There seems to be a choice.
Yeah.
That green stuff is really.
Don't look at it.
Is there any vodka in there?
No, it might make it taste a little better, but I did put 3 hot peppers in it though.
Oh my gosh, Lisa Woo-hoo! Murphy.
Live it on the edge.
Oh man, I would hate to be your butt.
I mean, I'm losing all the weight
for so many reasons. I just lose everything looking at that.
Won't drink it anymore.
No, I didn't know your healthy drink would.
How are you going?
So let me. I'll just pull my hat down over my eyes.
Your hat down.
Let me know when you're done. I like playing with these little strategies for changing things up, because I think so often we just get into this rut of doing things the way they've always been done.
I'm going to actually lift it to a different angle,
uh-huh.
Not because I disagree with anything that's being said, but I think it's maybe at the heart of at least where my brain is going right now, is that sometimes to move the behavior of a group, it requires one person to at least initially appear as though they're the only one doing it, you know, and then some people might start tagging along, or some people might start asking more questions, because, you know, there's so many reasons why somebody maybe wouldn't be on board, right? Ranging from complete, like, disagreement. But then I think also sometimes, and forgive me, but like ignorance, in the sense that, like, oh, I didn't know that that's something that I was supposed to do. And I think initially making room for either end of the continuum and then everything in the middle. So the first scenario that came to my head, Jeff, and it's pretty much the same as your poop, but I'm thinking classroom, is when the teacher decides, you know, that I'm going to spearhead the cleaning up effort instead of yelling and screaming and putting kids in timeout and ringing bells and flicking lights. But sorry, I got distracted, Brett. It looked like a door behind you just opened. I'm like, ooh, I watched too much Ghost Adventures. I'm waiting for something.
I was waiting for an axe murderer.
That's the closet door.
So part of me thinks axe murderer, and then I don't say anything about it. So,
oh my God, that's funny. I'm waiting for like an anomaly to come flying through the air or something. I'm thinking of cleanup in the classroom, you know, that initially, instead of whining and complaining about how come the kids never do it, you know, there is room for the adult to take the initiative, you know, of controlling the environment. You know, if I'm wanting all of my teachers to start doing more process story oriented stuff, I'm going to be very direct in what that looks like. I'm going to make sure every classroom has the materials. You know, I'm going to be stacking the deck in my favor. And then, you know, oh, this can come out every day. You know, there's just so many reasons why sometimes people aren't on board. And I think we often incorrectly jump to conclusions instead of just working towards finding a solution to some degree. You know, if I need the classroom to start getting cleaned up for whatever reason, then I'm going to get my ass on the floor, you know, and start doing something about it. Because I also know kids' behavior. There's going to be somebody who wants to come over and help put the stuff away. There's going to be somebody who just wants a job. There's some, you know, and there's going to be somebody who never does it, right? I have no ulterior motive, really. It's not like I'm going to be mad if Jonathan doesn't come over and help me. But I'm not going to just stand there and stew because I think that something should be done, but I'm not really doing anything about it.
Yeah. So, Brett, what sparked you, instead of standing there and stewing about this child who's having problems during those transition times, what sparked you to do a little bit of experimenting? Is that your standard MO? Or
I think so. Or it's like, if this is what's hard right now, how can I kind of like make it easier? How can I take away what's hard and like not like take away the responsibility or the job of it, but make it feel better for everybody involved? And so like with that child, it's kind of become his responsibility that he's taken on, but his choice too, is he brings out everybody's mats for rest time during that time. But like through that, he's, you know, learned to how to read everybody's name in the classroom because all their mats are labeled with their names. And it's like, well, that's pretty cool for a four-year-old to know. And he knows, oh, this child doesn't like when I touch his thing, so I'm going to leave it there for him to get on his own later and all those. And then it's like, you did all of that. And then he's like, okay, now I'm just going to clean up my lunch because I want to get back in there and help everybody. So yeah, just always, I don't know, thinking like, this is hard right now. How can we make it easier? Like with, you know, kids who you have the hard time with like the cleanup because they want like the control over the things. It's like, well, then why don't we just let him take 45 minutes to clean up 10 cars if that's what he needs, because I'd rather not fight. I'd rather everybody feel good, because then when you feel successful at school, you're just going to keep going with that feeling, especially being most children's first school experiences. You just want them to feel I want them to feel successful.
Yeah.
I like the mindset, Brett, that you're modeling and encouraging, which is that it's not a letting the kid get away with something. I think that's something sometimes a stumbling block when I suggest things that are very similar to that, is that sometimes our adult brain feels like that kid now is getting special treatment. Mm-hmm. And I always think about Tamar when I always want to kind of channel Tamar Jacobson when I have that kind of a conversation of, if this is what this child is needing from us right now, you know, let's remember that they're four, you know, let's remember that they're three, and you know, they're not trying to make you absolutely crazy.
Well, I mean, some of us just need jobs. Me and that child are the exact same. I need a job at the dog park. I need to be the poop cop. And so that, I mean, it makes the dog park more enjoyable for everybody, but it also gives me a thing. And same with this kid in the mats. It's some of us just need that kind of.
Well, and I almost wonder too, and I'm not a psychologist, obviously, but from a psychological point of view, he kind of went into task mode while doing something that he knew was a real job, right? It wasn't one of those fake, stupid time killer jobs. Like he knows that really has to happen.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, exactly. And so I'm already kind of in that zone. So it makes perfect sense that I would kind of be more in that mental space of being willing to now come clean up my mess or my spot, and then go back and continue to be, you know, helpful to the whole group.
Yeah, totally. And he's said like no before, like, no, I don't want to do it this time. But it's once he sees other kids going through and starting to do it without him, he's like, oh, actually, I do want to go. And he's like, okay, yeah, you're allowed to change your mind too. You know, yeah. I'm not going to hold you to it when everybody else needs to be going this direction too.
So are your coworkers cool with that flip? Or, I mean, are you all on the pretty much the same page for dealing with things?
Yeah, it's me and one co-teacher. And I feel like we're all, like with all the kids, it's always like, what can we do? Like we're seeing them like struggle, or this part of the day is hard or whatever it may be. And like, what can we do? Like, what are they showing us? You know, like our child who was having a hard time cleaning up, and it was like, you know, like just putting everything away was hard because he just wanted to keep using all of it. And then we kind of like thought about like, well, he, you know, he switches homes like every like couple of days. And so he doesn't have like ownership of a lot of stuff, kind of that sort of feeling. So we're like, how about we just give him a spot where he can keep things. So we put a piece of paper, taped it to the counter. We said, you can put things in that spot. Everything else needs to get put away that doesn't fit though. And then that's worked for him, is he gets to pick out, you know, like the 5, 6, however many cars that will fit on that piece of paper. And and we keep them there all week for him, you know, until he's ready to put them away. They're going to stay in that spot. And a couple other kids now have started to be like, can I save this on the counter till I'm ready? Like, sure. You know, it's not like just for that one child. But yeah, we talk about like, what's hard? Why could it be hard? And how can we support them through that? So a lot of like, and asking the child too, how would you feel if we tried this time? Or even like, you know, making a plan for pickup if pickup's hard. Like, you screamed when mom came, what can we do so that she feels better, you feel better? Because when you scream, you clearly don't feel good. And making plans based on what they bring to the table.
I'm loving the flexibility that you're modeling, Brett, especially like it doesn't appear as though, although you and your staff, your team, your coworkers might have talked about it, you're not letting the fact that this kid needs something different, you're not falling into that trap of, but then everybody's going to want it, right? And so you automatically shut it down, even though it's a great idea, because you're worried that everybody else is going to expect it as well. And yet still making room for the few who start to notice and who are like, ooh, I want to try
and
that.
And sometimes, yeah, we'll have that conversation of like, well, what if then everybody wants to save stuff on the counter? And we're like, well, we have enough counter space, you know, or yeah. If they all do, we'll figure it out, because it's not hurting anybody. It's not a bad thing to leave some stuff out. And then we always relate it back to like, if me as an adult, if I wanted to do that, would that be okay? And it's like, yeah, if I wasn't done filling out a paper, whatever, I would leave it on the counter to remind myself I wanted to finish it later. How can I tell them, no, you need to pack it away so you can't see it anymore?
And I think that even, Jeff, to go back to your kind of baby step, even just that thought process is a baby step towards, I think, impacting long-term change of practice is having that. What would we do? We know it's unlikely that every kid is going to say, I need to do this, but let's look around the space and actually have we do have enough space. So in theory, it wouldn't matter. I know it's not going to happen, but if it did, we're okay. And to me, that's a little bit about, you're like 2 steps ahead. It's like preventative in the moment caregiving. Like I'm examining where it might go, but I'm not going to let that distract me. But I'm ready if it plays out that way.
Yeah. And this has been a couple examples of these little micro experiments to make everything work better that have worked. We could probably go on for another hour about trying these things and then they don't work. And then you try something else. And so I think part of this is one of the reasons this has worked in Brett's situation is that all the adults seem to be on the same page, which is huge, because I know of plenty of environments where somebody like Brett would want to try this new little, just this little change. And it would just drive the other person in that room to rage. Probably not expressed, but just seething under the surface, like, how dare she change thing? And this is my classroom. And so
we've always done it. Then everybody's going to want one.
And so, I mean, that shit happens all the time. And then the other piece of it is being willing to try something and have it not work and know that that's okay too. Because I think a lot of times we're scared of trying things different because we put the energy into it and it might fail and then we wasted our time. But the truth is that's not a waste of time.
But it's not. I was just going to say. That's
yeah,
not.
We figured out what doesn't work, which brings us one step closer to figuring out what's going to maybe make this a little bit better for us.
And to me, the whole scenario sums up what one of Dan Hodgins's sound bites, which is what part of this can I say yes to?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I love that quote. I've been really thinking a lot about that one. What piece of this request can I say yes to? What piece of this behavior can I say yes to? And I think that I'm super quick to apply that to adult child interaction. I'd like to mentally unpack it more with adult to adult, like co-teacher interaction. Mm-hmm. Because I think it might assist in some of like what you were saying, if your co-teacher is the one who right out the gate is like, nope, or the real passive aggressive, right? Okay, if that's what you want to do today, you know, and then she drinks all your coffee or spills it off the counter or something, bitch.
I mean, related to that, I've been doing, like I mentioned a couple episodes ago, I've been doing a little bit more one-on-one consulting with programs, kind of helping with implementation and stuff. And it seems like everything, all the things, and we of course know this, all the things go back to those relationships.
Shut up.
All the problems, all the quote-unquote problems in programs seem to be people problems. I mean, it's so basic, and yet it's something that's so hard to do. And so that little bit of experimenting and A-B testing and being willing to try things with an open mind and fail and then try something else is I think a great mindset to not only bring to the early learning classroom but life in general, whether it's getting a Bobby to help transition from lunchtime to rest time or getting that lady over there to pick up her dog poop. It's all about experimenting. This year has been the Child Care Bar and Grill podcast. We're going to come back with another episode. I'm going to tease this a little bit. We're going to check in with Brett when we get going about how things have been going at her program as we're moving through the pandemic. And I got an update that also involves dog poop. So stay tuned for that because, I got to check with Kenny, our Child Care Bar and Grill podcast intern. Kenny, do you have the statistics I was looking for that next episode we're going to do?
Sure, Mr. Johnson. I'll have them on your desk before you start the next episode.
Thanks, Kenny. Thanks. And I could use a freshened up drink.
Yes, Mr. Johnson.
This has been the Child Care Bar and Grill podcast. Back soon. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
This has been an Explorations Early Learning Upstairs Studio production.